are back on the record anticipating Dr. McDonald as respondent's next witness. Dr. McDonald, would you raise your right hand, please? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth?
I do.
To proceed.
Yes. Hi, Dr. McDonald. Would you please state and spell your name for the record?
Thomas T. McDonald, MACDONALD.
And Dr. McDonald, what is your current profession?
I am Professor of Immunology and Dean for Research at Barts in the London School of Medicine and Dentistry.
And Doctor, would you briefly describe your university and graduate education?
Okay, I'm an immunologist, but when I started off doing immunology many years ago, immunology wasn't a discrete course. And so as an undergraduate, I took the only option to learn immunology, which was in a parasitology course. But after I graduated, I wanted to do my doctorate, and I wanted to do immunology. So I did a doctorate on how immune reactions, particularly T-cell mediated immune reactions, could damage the human and mouse gut. I had got my PhD in 1976, and the title of my PhD was called Delayed Hypersensitivity Reactions in the Small Intestine. Then subsequently, I did a postdoctoral training in upstate New York at the Trudeau Institute in Saranac Lake, New York, where I went because I really wanted to learn about T-cells from one of the world leading laboratories. And the person I worked with was actually particularly interested in the way in which the normal microbes in the gut could influence T-cell function.
And would you briefly describe your work history in the field of immunology?
I have been a researcher in the laboratory been doing experiments since 1973 and have been publishing papers throughout this period. I run an active research group which is funded by external bodies, peer-reviewed external bodies, including the European Union, the Medical Research Council of the UK, and the Biological and Biotechnology Science Research Council in the UK. Most of my research work these days is now studying the human gastrointestinal immune system instead of the murine gastrointestinal immune system. So I like to try and look in people, especially children, to try and find out what is causing these terrible, devastating diseases, inflammatory bowel disease particularly.
And Doctor, did you work for a time for Merck?
Yes, I did actually. I had a very interesting time at Merck. I was working in Philadelphia as an associate professor at Jefferson Medical College, and I don't know what happened. I was seduced to go to North Jersey and work in Rahway, and when I went for my interview, the sun was shining, and it seemed very good to me to go there. But in fact, when I got up to Rahway, I discovered that not only Merck was not particularly the sort of place I wanted to work in, but also I didn't want to live in North Jersey. So I had to make a decision about what to do, whether to go back into academia in the U.S. And I was offered a position at Yale. But then, for personal reasons, I decided to move back to London because for family reasons.
And what is your current position at the Barts in London?
I'm a professor of immunology and dean for research in the Medical and Dental School.
And what is your research budget?
The research budget of the Medical and Dental School, the spend last year, was $76 million.
And could you just describe some of your responsibilities in your position?
Okay. So I run a lab where I do research on inflammation, mostly in the human gastrointestinal tract. But most of my time these days is actually taking up with looking after and administering the research portfolio of the Medical and Dental School, which has six institutes, about 300 independent researchers, about 2,000 staff in total, and it covers a whole range of medical disciplines from diabetology to cardiology, inflammation biology, surgery, microbiology, immunology. So I have a broad portfolio. I'm essentially in charge of the research direction and of the School of Medicine and Dentistry, and also ensuring performance standards to make sure that our research meets the standards that it needs to be competitive in the 21st century.
Do you teach at the Barts in London?
Yes, I'm in charge of all the immunology teaching, and I teach about inflammatory bowel disease and gastroenterology. I teach the undergraduate medical students. I teach the undergraduate science students in a very popular course, and I teach the PhD students the postgraduate students doing MSCs and PhDs, and also I teach the young immunology to the young trainee doctors who've graduated from medical school, because we have a different system in the UK, which is medicine is not a postgraduate degree, it's an undergraduate degree. So after 5 years, they have to go into further training, and then I teach them in immunology subsequently to try to get them up to speed.
And have you published articles in the field of gut immunology?
Yes, I've published many, many articles in the field of gut immunology over many years.
Your CV lists 158, and you have refereed articles. Is that the same thing as what we
that means
peer reviewed?
That means peer reviewed.
And have you written a book on gut immunology?
Yes, I've just published a book on gut immunology, because I felt it's actually called Gut or Immunology and Gut Disease. Because I felt that there was a problem in immunology's rather complicated discipline anyway, and gut immunology is a little part of that, and that's also quite complicated. And I felt that there was a need for quite a simple book that explained the basic aspects of immunology and gut immunology, and then showed how these mechanisms were important in gut diseases. So I also set up an A to Z of gut diseases, starting off with allergic colitis and going down to yersiniosis. So that if someone wanted to know what was happening in, say, ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, they could read a bit about the immunology, then they could just go to C, flip open, and there'd be the key things about Crohn's disease really in a very easily digestible fashion.
And how many books have you edited on the immunology?
7 or 8, I think, actually. And I'm doing another 2 at the moment.
And have you written any book chapters or other publications?
I've written hundreds of book chapters. That's right, yeah.
Do you currently, or have you ever, served on the editorial board of a scientific journal?
Yes, I was on the editorial board of the British Society of Gastroenterology's official journal, GUT, from 1996 to 2003. I was also on the editorial board of the American Gastroenterological Association's journal, Gastroenterology, the top journal in its field, from 2000 to 2006. I'm also currently an associate editor of the Journal of the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America, called the journal is called Inflammatory Bowel Diseases, and I've also been on various other smaller and less significant journals.
Are you a reviewer for any scientific journals?
Yes, I review all the time, actually. I review a lot for gastroenterology, because I feel that the quality of the journal depends on good and adequate refereeing to make sure that things that are bad don't get to the literature. But I also review a lot for Science and Nature, PNAS, GX Med, essentially all the top broad scientific journals in the world, but especially for so if anything comes up that's vaguely gut associated, that goes to Nature Medicine, the premier journal in medical research, I tend to see it. I also do papers for The Lancet, and I did one for the New England Journal of Medicine once.
And do you sit on any research panels?
Yes, I'm on the Physiological Systems Panel of the Medical Research Council of the UK, which is the panel that reviews grants on the organ-specific diseases of the gut, the airway, and the skin. So traditional, actually, medicine. I'm also on the MRC's Experimental Medicine Panel. The Medical Research Council of the UK. It's the UK's equivalent to NIH, with a much smaller budget, of course. And I'm also sit on other smaller grant-giving bodies as well, such as the Crohn's and Childhood Research Association grant-giving body, of which I'm on the Medical Advisory Board also.
Do you have any learned society memberships?
Yes, actually, I'm a fellow of the Royal College of Pathologists, which is an honorary degree that's given for people who've published lots of papers in an area. I got that in 1995 on the basis of the quality of my published works. The thing I'm most proud of, though, is I was elected in 2002 to be a fellow of the Academy of Medical Science in the UK, which I think I'm the only gut immunologist on it. It was a body to put together as a side-by-side with the Royal Society of Britain, which is actually all science. It was actually to put up a learned body of experts in medicine who could help the government and advise on policy and come out with and give them a source of really authoritative opinions on medical issues of the day. So I was elected to that in 2002.
And do you speak frequently on the topic of gut immunology?
I speak on gut immunology and inflammation and inflammatory bowel disease all the time. I was in Dresden last week talking at a FALC symposium on inflammatory bowel disease. Next, in a few weeks, I'm going to talk at the inflammatory bowel disease think tank, which the Swedish government have put forward to think about new ways in which we can think about treating these diseases and understanding these diseases. And I do this thing all the time. I also work very closely with industry to try to develop new therapies for treating inflammatory bowel disease.
Doctor, did you participate as an expert witness in the MMR litigation in the United Kingdom?
I didn't get to the witness part. I only got to the expert part because the litigation was stopped after our expert witness reports were submitted to the Legal Aid Board.
What role did you have during the expert part of that litigation?
I was approached in 1998 by Lovells, a law company who were representing Merck against the litigation in the UK, for the idea that MMR was associated with caused autism. So my role in that was to evaluate essentially the evidence that measles virus was present in the gut of autistic children using techniques of immunohistochemistry and PCR, and also to talk about whether in fact there was such a thing as gut inflammation in autistic children. In other words, really, does autistic enterocolitis exist? So it was an interesting time because there really wasn't any literature until the 1998 paper came out, which was the Wakefield paper. But then subsequently, over the next 5 years, actually it sort of rolled out as the data came along and more papers were published on this. So I'm familiar with these papers.
Doctor, you said you didn't get to the witness part. Have you ever testified in court before?
Never.
Turning to this case, what material did you review in preparation for your testimony today?
Well, I reviewed Dr. Bue's report. I reviewed Crickson's report in the Cedillo case, and I reviewed Corby's report, and I reviewed lots of relevant publications, newer publications, later publications, older publications. So essentially, if it had been mentioned in either Craigsman or Bowie's report or actually Corby's report, I went over these papers again and just to make sure, refresh my memory.
Did you review the medical records of Yates pertaining to his GI issues?
Yes, I did, yes.
Do you agree with Dr. Corbier that Yates likely has an immunological disturbance affecting his gut?
No.
Now, based on your review of the records, has Yates experienced gastrointestinal symptoms?
Yes.
And in your opinion, are those symptoms causally related to the MMR vaccine?
No.
Does Yates have inflammatory bowel disease?
No.
In your opinion, is Yates' autism causally related to the MMR vaccine?
No.
Would your opinion be different if his regression into autism had an onset at 12 months?
No.
Now let's look at the basis of your opinions and start with the medical records that have been filed in this case. Did you review the medical records pertaining to the upper endoscopy and the colonoscopy that Dr. Bowie performed on April 17th of 2003?
Yes.
And for the record, I'm referring to Petitioner's Exhibit 20. Did I hand you, before you took the stand, a copy of Petitioner's Exhibit 20?
Mm-hmm.
If you could please turn to page 2.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the report of the upper endoscopy?
Yes.
What were the findings?
When the endoscope was put down, they saw some inflammation from an endoscopic point of view in the esophagus. The stomach was normal and the upper duodenum was normal. And then some biopsies were taken of the stomach, of the duodenum, and of the esophagus to be sent for histopathology.
Was reflux esophagitis found during this upper endoscopy?
Reflux esophagitis cannot be found during reflux esophagitis is a functional thing in which acid goes back up. When you see inflammation in the esophagus of a child, and this is actually a rather common observation, that is seen by a reddening of the mucosa, which is consistent with reflux esophagitis, but doesn't actually show reflux esophagitis.
And a biopsy was taken of the esophagus?
Yes.
And I'm referring to petitioner's exhibit 20 at 8, which is the pathology report of the biopsy taken.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What was the pathology finding of the esophageal biopsy?
It was no diagnostic abnormality recognized.
If you could please turn to petitioner's exhibit 20 at 4 through 6.
Page 4.
4, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is this a report of Yates' colonoscopy?
Yes.
And what were the visual findings at colonoscopy?
The mucosa was normal of the colon, and the ileum was also normal, but what was noted was some nodular lymphoid hyperplasia at the sigmoid colon and rectum.
Doctor, have you ever observed a colonoscopy?
Yes, I've seen hundreds and thousands of colonoscopies.
Now, you mentioned that nodular lymphoid hyperplasia was found at the sigmoid colon and the rectum. What is lymphoid nodular hyperplasia?
Lymphoid nodular hyperplasia is actually an enlargement of the lymph nodes in the small intestine and the colon. Children generally have a more abundant immune system than adults. They have larger lymph nodes. This is particularly true in the gastrointestinal tract, because children are not only susceptible to upper respiratory tract infections, but they also suffer lots of gastrointestinal infections. So it's extremely well documented that if you look into the intestine of a child compared to the intestine of an adult, there are more lymph nodes as part of the normal situation. Lymphonodular hyperplasia is a very subjective assessment in which it is felt by the endoscopist as they're looking through that these are larger or more prominent than would normally be seen. And it's very much a subjective assessment.
Is it a pathological diagnosis?
No.
Could you please explain why that is?
The histopathology or the histology of lymphoid follicles in autism, in lymphoid hyperplasia, is identical to the histopathology of the lymphoid follicles in all healthy individuals. Just to prepare for this, actually, I went over some of the older literature, and I just this is something which is really well acknowledged. And for example, this is a paper of the normal histology of the colon in American Journal of Surgical Pathology, quite a long time ago. It says 1 to 2 mucosal lymphoid follicles or lymphoglandular complexes may be present in the normal colorectal biopsy and should not be mistaken for increased mononuclear density due to inflammation. It is extremely well recognized that actually that lymphoid follicles are part of the normal components of the gastrointestinal tract.
Dr. McDonald, would you note the author's name?
Yes, certainly. So this is a paper by Levine and Haggett, and I'll just leave it. It's not controversial, actually. I shall just leave it here.
Okay, and the page number?
Okay, that was, pages 978 to 979.
Thank you. So, Doctor, then does a finding of lymphoid nodular hyperplasia mean that one has an inflammatory bowel disease?
Absolutely not. In fact, quite the reverse.
Does the finding of lymphoid hyperplasia mean that one has an inflammatory condition at all?
No.
Is the finding of lymphoid nodular hyperplasia in the lower bowel of a child considered an abnormal finding?
No.
Doctor, did you review the medical records in this case pertaining to Dr. Bowie?
Yes.
Did Dr. Bowie anywhere in those medical records state that the finding of lymphoid nodular hyperplasia in Yates indicated an inflammatory bowel disease?
No, because that would be wrong. And he's a very good physician. And it's extremely, when endoscopists and pathologists see lymphoid follicles in either a tissue section or through the endoscope, they note it, but it is of no diagnostic significance.
Did you review the expert report submitted by Dr. Bowie in this case as petitioner's exhibit 50?
Yes.
Does Dr. Bowie in that report state that the finding of lymphoid nodular hyperplasia is evidence of inflammatory bowel disease?
No.
In fact, does Dr. Bowie state that lymphoid nodular hyperplasia is evidence of inflammation at all?
No.
I'd like to turn to the pathology that was taken of the biopsies of the colonoscopy. If you could please look at Petitioner's Exhibit 20 at 8. What was the pathology findings of biopsy taken of the ileum?
It was completely normal.
And is the ileum the part of the small bowel?
Yes, it's the end of the small bowel, just before the ileocecal valve, before the food goes into the colon, into the cecum.
And what were the pathology findings of the biopsies of Yates's colon?
Okay. These were, would you like me to say these individually or actually through or actually through summation? His colon and the cecum, which is the first part of the colon, scattered intraepithelial eosinophils and increased cellularity of the lamina propria. In the colon, transverse biopsy, essentially the same. In the sigmoid colon, which is just before the rectum, the same thing, and also in the biopsies of the rectum were fragments of unremarkable colonic mucosa. I think it's important to note that actually there is some slight differences between the comments at the top and under in the note, in which there's some important information talking about eosinophils in the lamina propria, which is not mentioned. That is the area of tissue below the epithelium, and particularly the pathologist looked to see if there was some of the more characteristic features of allergic enterocolitis, such as eosinophils in the crypts, and these were not seen after examination at multiple levels. So the pathologist made a good effort to try to look to see if this was a really severe eosinophilic colitis, but could not find it. So the consequence of the end was a mild eosinophilic colitis, perhaps related to food allergies.
Let's break down what the pathology findings were. What are intraepithelial eosinophils?
Okay, eosinophils is a type of inflammatory cell which moves into tissues when, usually during allergic diseases. So, and it's present in the, eosinophils live in the blood, normally at low levels, and when you have an allergic response, for example, in the airway or the skin, eosinophils move into the tissue. It's very much a non-specific cell. So, for example, ulcerative colitis, a classical inflammatory bowel disease, there are more eosinophils in the gut wall because it is inflamed. But the tendency, people tend, if they see eosinophils in a colonic biopsy, the bell starts saying allergy of some sort, which is why the pathologist cut through the tissues to look for real more evidence of severe allergic enterocolitis.
Is the finding of intraepithelial eosinophils evidence of an inflammatory bowel disease?
No. It is not pathognomic of inflammatory bowel disease.
Are intraepithelial eosinophils found in developmentally normal children?
Yes.
And do you have a slide on this?
Yes. If you go to the first slide. Okay, I'm sorry about this actually, but this is a study from Furlano, which is one of the largest studies from the Royal Free Hospital, which has the largest experience of looking at the gastrointestinal tract of autistic children. And this is table 2. And this is a very interesting study because they looked in autistic children, which you can see at the left, normal control subjects, so that's children without gastrointestinal inflammation. But the next column is children with lymph node hyperplasia, control subjects. These children did not have had lymph node hyperplasia, but were colonoscoped because they had severe and intractable constipation that was a clinical reason for undergoing an endoscopy, which is a fairly serious procedure. When biopsies were taken of all of these children, what you can see is interesting, which is that actually the colitis score on autistic children is 1.4, which is significantly higher than normal control subjects, but is not different from the children with lymph node hyperplasia, which is 0.6. But importantly, in terms of what we're seeing here, if you look at the lamina propria eosinophils, 0.9 in the autistic children, 0 in the normal subjects, and 2.1 in lymph node hyperplasia, children who had severe and chronic constipation. these children are developmentally normal, and their problem is not inflammatory bowel disease, but they have constipation. So what this shows quite clearly is that increase in eosinophils in the gut is a consequence